Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be sharing this with you today because this is information that I'm incredibly passionate about, and I hope that you can also get a little bit of that passion and feel a little bit excited actually with some of the opportunities that are ahead of us as communicators. So the original title of this is actually, Are Your Social Media Posts Actually Making Your Clients Depressed? But so there is really actually nothing about tires or diamonds in this presentation. But this is really a presentation about, we actually did a very large study of all the academic studies that we could find from around North America and actually around the world, around how social media was affecting people's well-being. So we're going to be talking a lot about some of the things that we found and also some very simple things that we as communicators can be doing to actually make things better for people's mental health. And so in the meantime, there's some components in this too that are also really relevant for internal communications as well. So it is focused on social media, but there's certainly a lot of lessons that we can pull into speaking internally into our corporations. So in 1983, the internet was born. It was a time of bright and shiny opportunities. Brands were built, and marketers had their moment. It also became, sorry, it came to a point where people were really finding, money was being raised, connections were happening, communities were being built, friendships were being strengthened, and connections were actually happening. But there's also a lot of things that were happening that were a bit tricky, and it also caused people to be able to connect in totally new ways and be able to talk about some of the things that were affecting them en masse and make some really significant social changes in the last little while. And it also has some bad things that are happening online. Spoiler alert! Big surprise, but there are a lot of things going on online too that are also causing a lot of intensity for ourselves, for our children, for organizations, for our work, and has a lot of impact on us as humans. The thing is actually, as all of this social change is happening, as all people are feeling connected, people are expecting more from corporations than ever. And they're putting their money behind their beliefs. So people are actually expecting corporations to, 52% of them are looking at them to solve climate change and work towards that, to fix economic inequality, and to be working towards workplace reskilling. There's also the other side of it on the consumer side, where 58% of people will be buying and advocating for brands based on their beliefs and values. 60% will choose to place a place to work based on their beliefs and values, and that also has some levels for retention. And then again, 80% will invest based on their beliefs and values. And so this is something that is a societal change, and this is only expected to be increasing, where corporations are no longer expected to just be handling and responding to their shareholders. They're also expected to be a force in society to make things more inclusive, to make things more accessible, and to make people feel more part of things and be moving towards social and climate change. So no pressure. If you can also solve the world's problems, that would be wonderful. But I believe that this is a massive opportunity for communicators in this time. This is the time for us to be standing up and really helping both our society and our corporations. Digital marketer for 12 years, former tech company owner, and I'm a mother. But I see an opportunity where we can be communicators and actually be leading this and taking a step ahead and helping and making sure that we're taking care of the health of people who are participating online, both internally and externally. So I founded Ethical Digital. It is a small goal of changing the trajectory of the internet. So we are just getting started. We've been working on this for about 2 years, and we have 18 people across Canada working on different pieces. The foundation of our business is we do social media, websites, email strategy, ads that are inclusive. We ensure that we can be making sure that people with audio, visual disabilities, low literacy skills can access a lot of the content that we're creating. But I got worried. I started to get very worried of, well, it was great, COVID was happening, masks versus no masks, Trump was at his peak, and there was a lot of volatility online. And I got concerned. I was like, are we, as communicators, going to be seen as the next tobacco company? And my apologies to those who are here from the tobacco industry, but we all know that was a very difficult time where people are looking at this and saying, you should have known. And so in the meantime, I really got concerned about it. So I reached out to the University of Saskatchewan, and as I said, we gathered all the academic research we could find in the world. We have hundreds of studies. And spoiler alert, there's absolutely a correlation between social media use and depression, anxiety, self-esteem, sleep issues, all sorts of things that we all are facing in this day to day. And originally I thought that I would, you know, get a grant or get some sponsorship and share this. Hey, Canadians, you know, like this is really affecting you. Social media is affecting you. Let's be conscious about this. And then one of the very first studies that we found was actually a group of students who had all been diagnosed with the issues that we're talking about, anxiety, sleep, depression. They were brought together to talk about social media. And 100% of them said, oh yeah, social media causes those problems. But 100% of them said, but not for me. And that was the first thing for me where I thought, okay, first of all, if we're going to do this in a big mass, you know, experience, we wanted to share this with people. First of all, nobody thinks they have this problem. And second of all, what can you do to solve it other than boycott, you know, with that kind of information? And we all know there's connection points. There's great things that are happening online, and it's a huge part of our society. So we went back to the drawing board and really started to think about this and think about how can we be actually making some change with this and make things better for humans. And so basically, we ended up coming up with this training that I'll share with you. But these are the highlights from this of some of the things that we can be doing as communicators right now. And we really want to be focusing on people who are creating content for the internet, because we are the ones who have the power to change. The consumers likely aren't going to change. It's a very, you know, it's a very difficult thing to just stop and, you know, and decide what you're going to pay attention to or not. And in fact, a lot of the messaging and all the activities that we do are often unconscious. You're not even thinking about it. You're bored, you pull out your phone, and there you go. But the main thing is that we really want, as communicators, I think it's an awesome opportunity for us to step up and say, hey, we're going to be ahead of this, and we're going to be just doing some simple things to make it so that we're taking care of our people's mental health, not only internally in organizations, externally for our audiences and potential clients down the road. So let's begin with FOMO. Good old FOMO, the fear of missing out. And this is actually, people even use this as a joke, I got FOMO about this, I got FOMO about that. It's actually a relatively new term, it's only about 3 years old. And basically, if you ever look at somebody, your competitors or some friends, you know, gathering, there's a photo up and you weren't there, you just get that feeling in your stomach. I certainly suffer from FOMO a lot. And it's actually something that's very, very common. I thought it was actually even more common than the numbers were, because I guess I suffer from it, so I assumed everybody did. But in the meantime, about 69% of millennials are suffering from it. People with household incomes, this was interesting to me, about above $75,000 a year are often people who are suffering from FOMO. I don't really like this term that it, you know, it impacts those who lack self-confidence and security, but it does. It is something where if you actually are suffering from anxiety or you have a predilection towards that kind of a feeling, FOMO can actually push you towards that. And it's a simple, simple thing. We have an example here. We built this example, but we've been putting this into our marketing practices regularly. You know, what if we just didn't use it? Because FOMO can be such a powerful tool as a marketer. And a lot of people, it's just, you know, you're throwing an event, you're throwing FOMO on that post. But what if as a communicator, we just don't use it? We use terms instead of join us, make it more inclusive, and connection point rather than if you're not part of this, you're going down. And so there's some pieces like this, and they can be just as effective. We've done several marketing for several online events, and we've oversold them without ever using FOMO. And so it's something where I'd like to challenge us as communicators to start thinking about this and think about how we can avoid having that feeling of, you know, getting here or you're not good enough, you know, just in our communication. And even though it's very subtle and you're probably not even feeling it yourself, over time it starts to erode and starts to push people into these spaces around their mental health, and it just contributes to an overall lower level of well-being. And let's talk about sleep. Sleep is another huge, huge area. We know that our personal sleep patterns are being affected by the social media. The blue light has been well studied. We know that it actually affects us, keeps us up later at night. It's not just that. There's a whole rabbit holes, right? You're just like, oh, I'm just going to check the weather for tomorrow. And next thing you know, you're like discovering who shot Lincoln. And you can just pull into rabbit holes. So again, it just, you pull you up later in the night. And this is actually an extreme issue for our adolescents right now. And it actually correlates a lot with FOMO for adolescents. We're finding that sleep patterns for our young people are actually way out of whack right now, because a lot of people are communicating late at night, and a lot of teenagers do not want to get off in time for a reasonable bedtime because they will miss the conversations that are going on into the later time at nights. So what does this mean though for adults? It actually means that there's a couple simple things that we can be doing. We have a lot of suggestions, but this is just one that we can put in. It could be as simple as timing our posts. And I know a lot of you work internationally, but setting things up properly so it is going at the right times for people, so they're not getting a major contest announcement or a major, you know, something that they need to go for work before 9 a.m. or, you know, after 6 p.m. or something like that. Like, just really thinking internally in terms of what we're doing and being very conscious about, this is a sleep pandemic. We want to keep people off of the phones later at night. We don't want them to feel like they're going to be getting an important email or an important text or important message in the evening that they're going to be the only ones who missed out on or something like that. So in my organization, we have a policy we use. We're small. We don't get to use first that. Someday. But in the meantime, we use Slack. And so in the meantime, we require people that after business hours that you actually will schedule any Slack messages. So even if by chance we have a flex work time, like say you're working in the evening just to make up some hours, you know, that's fine, but everything needs to be scheduled so it goes up the next morning so nobody else feels that they need to match your work schedule. So this guy, he looks happy, and there's a reason. Actually, we talked about this, this has been chatted about in a couple of the sessions, is the dopamine hit that people get when they're on social media. It is a real thing. And so it's actually, if you put people in MRIs, you can actually see that parts of your brain that are stimulated with cocaine and gambling, very similar to what happens when you're on social media. So in the meantime, it's actually structured that way. Social media is built to keep you there, keep you excited. They want to sell your eyeballs on their marketing. So they will, you know, everything is structured to almost biohack, to work with your what's going to make you want it more and come back and really enjoy social media. So in the meantime, we really want to make sure that as we're looking at, you know, social media algorithms, that we're even aware of that dopamine hit. Like, you know, you're like, I'm bored, I'll just go there quick, I feel good, so-and-so said a nice thing to me on this. So in the meantime, being very conscious of that dopamine effect can be really powerful. And it was kind of a tricky cycle too, because social media actually causes loneliness, depression, and anxiety. But a lot of people are going to social media to get that dopamine hit. So they're kind of going there to feel better, and like, oh, this is, you know, I'm gonna find a post or whatever. And a lot of times they're not getting the return of information in the way that they want that can actually get them over this loneliness, depression, anxiety. So it becomes like the doom scrolling, the actually going back and forth. That's actually a very real thing of people trying. And really, ultimately, what it boils down to is they're trying to be connected. And so they found in certain studies that if you have, if you're going on and you're putting your post and you're like, ta-da, and you don't hear anything back, that can actually just boom, drop your self-esteem and drop your, and you know, heighten your anxiety. But if you put things out and you get like, hey, that's a good idea, hey, I'd love to see you next Thursday, you know, and actually have some connection points on those posts and those connections, that's when actually things, social media can be a good impact. So what it boils down to is connection, and that's what everybody's seeking. So how can we as communicators be offering those connection points in a really authentic way that can actually help people with those mental health feelings? So they say that if we reduce our social media use to 30 minutes or less, you can actually see a reduction in your anxiety, depression, and loneliness, all of these other pieces. But here's the problem, as marketers, as internal communicators, you know, we want people's eyeballs. That's our job, is to get people's attention, get them to be sharing this. This puts us in a little bit of an awkward position. And so I'll just share for the people who can't see this as well, like 91% of young people are using the internet for social networking today, but rates of anxiety and depression have increased 70% in the past 25 years. Now you can look at those types of quotes, you know, and it may not be that much of a correlation. Maybe people are just more expressing their, you know, it's more reported that people are having these mental health issues. But I believe that, you know, with being able to see everything that's happening in the world, you know, for example, if a mass shooting happens in the past when I was young, I probably wouldn't have heard about it. Or maybe, you know, it would have been a major newspaper and I would have caught a little bit of it. Now when it happens, I'm right there. I feel it. I feel all of these world hurts. And not only that, you know, it's just the connection point. Instead of talking to somebody, we'll often sit down and look at our phones. And so in the meantime, you know, we have to figure out that balance of how do we get people's attention? How do we do our jobs in a way that's going to be somewhat healthy? So So don't worry, there are some solutions that are actually relatively not too hard to be implementing. So the very first thing, again, is creating content that connects. Really be thinking about how can I have an authentic conversation. You may need to be hiring community managers who are just there to be communicating with people and making them feel a part of things, responding to their comments, that sort of thing. Putting out comments that are very human in nature. Encouraging JOMO, not FOMO, the joy of missing out. So, you know, from the organizational standpoint, having different points where you're like, hey, you know, we're gonna have a no digital lunch hour, everybody go outside or go read a book or, you know, do something that is not digital. So, or just actually having sort of a culture where, you know, hey, what'd you do last night? It's not like, oh, we just sat down and watched Netflix. We want to celebrate people who are like, I did something that wasn't digital. I connected with my grandma, I pet my cat, you know, whatever the case may be. But it is important to be actually encouraging people, although we need them online at certain times and we need their attention at certain times, having that break, so that having the break from the social media and from the digital communications can really do a lot for people's mental health. So really encouraging that as well. We need them sometimes, but when we don't need them, let's really encourage people to just try to take breaks. Becoming self-aware of some of your, some of your own habits, and that's a big part of it. You know, when I told you that study of the 100 people who said, yes, of course it causes this, but not for me. I bet every one of you actually had that feeling. And I did too. I suffer from anxiety, I have all sorts of things. In the meantime, I was like, oh, I need to tell other people about this. And so in the meantime, having that moment to do that self-reflection and be thinking about your own engagement can be one of those very first steps, kind of helping you communicate with others. There's actually notebooks on each of the tables. Please feel free to take them. There's a whole bunch of suggestions in there for you to go through a self-examination. And I always love it if we can hand them out at the beginning of a conference, because it's my favorite when I see, instead of someone sitting down kind of not knowing who to talk to, instead of pulling out their phone, if they pulled that booklet. It's awesome. So in the meantime, I would just recommend that, spend some time thinking about your own usage. You can also go on your phone. Almost every smartphone has a meter for how much you're using your social media. Take a look at it. And sometimes those things might surprise you. Again, this room is probably one of the heaviest, use groups, not just for social media, but just for digital communications. But in the meantime, so we have to do these things for our jobs. But becoming aware of this and looking at it from a different perspective and thinking, okay, well, you know what, it's Sunday. It's a no digital day for me. And I do that often. I'll take a total digital detox day because I just know, now that I'm conscious of it, that it really does affect me. The other part of it is rethinking your social media behaviors. Just posting, not engaging, that sort of thing. And I know this is a sort of, digital marketing 101. You need to have a relationship and a community online. But in the meantime, again, we come back to that whole core of everything is connection. And having that sense of community and having that feeling that you're a part of something. So when you're online, you can still be broadcasting, and be like, hey, I'm at this conference, at Katrina Vision, saying, it's a wonderful conference. But in the meantime, I'm also trying to comment on other people's things. I'm like, hey, we're in community. Even though we're online, we're still here together. Because that's the point, that connection point. It's not just to be like, hey, I'm awesome. It's the idea that we're trying to be connecting with people and making sure that everything is, that people have an opportunity to express themselves but feel connected to a community. Another thing that we can do is, create accessible content. So, just be thinking about, again, removing that FOMO. What can you be doing if you know that there's people who are, dealing with depression or something in your groups? What are some of the things that you can be posting that's making it so that it's very clear? If you have people within your communities also who suffer from disabilities, maybe some of the literacy skills, things like that, really kind of putting those things into your thoughts when you're creating your content and putting it out. Another thing you can do is make intentional changes to your policies. I mentioned the one that we have where it's like if you're working after hours, you schedule your responses to people. In the meantime, there's a lot of different things that you can be doing if you want to be making this something that's important for your team, for yourself, for your internal organizations or extras. again, prioritize meaningful conversations over transactions. I love the presentation last night, you know, when she was like, when she was saying, here's the different layers of when you should be talking to each other, you know, and when this communication should be happening. But if, you know, I love that because the idea is, you know, don't be afraid to pick up that call. Don't be afraid to, you know, speak articulately, but actually be conscious about it and be thinking about, I'm not just here to communicate some information. I'm here because I want Bill to understand that I'm on his side, I'm on his team. We're on this team together. And so in the meantime, those are those big pieces. And then of course, this is something that everybody's doing, and in fact, probably one of the most important parts for internal communicators and external as well, is just disrupting that in misinformation. You know, not being afraid to very gently tell people, I mean, you know, hey, by the way, this has been, you know, this is not true. It's been, you know, the Snopes says it's not, you know, this way, but doing very gently, like, hey, wanted to let you know, like, this thing that we posted didn't work. And I that happens to me sometimes. I get excited about something. I'm like, look at this! It's a cricket that plays classical music. Just get excited when it looks so real, I'll share it. And then, you know, getting those gentle moments in behind where someone's like, oh, hey, that's actually not real. It's been, you know, and then just take it down, that sort of thing. But, you know, that's a, you know, a very light, you know, there's a lot of issues around misinformation. There could be a whole session on that by itself, but it is something that's an important part of our role that can really help as us, from us being communicators, to help our online audiences. And, you know, if there's some people, you know, like, I often talk to a lot of groups of, you know, entrepreneurs, executives, that sort of thing, and, you know, sometimes they're just like, well, that's nice. You know, it's really nice to make people feel included, that sort of thing. We got a business to run, money's our bottom line, that sort of thing. So if you're not kind of getting feel-goods, that's okay. There's actually some significant hard reasons that you want to be thinking about some of these changes. So the first is that, you know, the employees and future employees are expecting more. So if you put out if you make it clear that we're being conscious about the type of communications we do internally and externally, you're going to have a better, you know, just a better feel as people are joining your team. Customers and future customers, same thing. They want to be investing and putting their money into things that they believe in and people who are standing up for other humans. Regulators are starting to look at social media really hard. There's a lot of things going on in all different countries around the world. There's going to be a lot of changes happening over time. If you want to be ahead of those changes and just be like, hey, we've been doing this for years, you know, you can position your company as being a leader in terms of taking care of people and the types of content you're putting out. And really, ultimately, you know, we know that when you put this type of information out, you're like, hey, we're taking care of people's mental health by the type of things that we're posting, it just generally, you're going to put yourself ahead of the trend. Like, it's just beginning right now. We're all talking about DEI, we're all talking about these different pieces. There's an absolute role for communicators to also be in that position to be like, hey, we're taking a lead to make sure that we're taking, you know, we're hitting our organization's ESG goals. Here's how we're doing it through our communications policies. So in the long term too, ultimately what we want to do too is, like, this is our profession, this is what we do. And I loved when Kristen said yesterday that this is a soft group, hearted group of people, and I love that because I've been feeling that this entire time. This is people who care for people. And so in this particular group, so it's something for me, when I look at it, I just, you know, there's some very small things and small adjustments that we can be doing that can just show and signal that and ultimately make our entire profession a little bit better and a little bit ahead of the curve. Not just reacting when someone says, hey, social media is, you know, there's, you know, rising 13-year-old girls killing themselves, like that's a real thing based on Instagram. It's something where we can say, like, hey, we've been looking at this, we see these trends, and there's some things that we can be doing as the people who are contributing to this. So, yes, so many of you have been doing this already. Again, this is not brand new, this is not like, oh, wait, I shouldn't be mean online. This is a, you know, but there are some very specific things that we can just be doing just to tweak what we're doing a little bit more to make it a little bit more accessible for people. So yeah, so we'd love to, you know, in our case, we're a small business, we're in Canada, and we'd love to work with you. We do have opportunities for training yourself, training your team, training your whole organization. And basically what we want to do, this QR code will take you there, but if you do want to learn more about it, I can actually just send you a free code. I would like everybody here to go through our training for free. You know, if you have the opportunity, because it is something we will use self-awareness as the tool to teach, where you really get to learn about your own experiences, what your viewpoints are, and then allow you to kind of say, well, hey, like, here's maybe some other options for things that you can be doing instead. So that's Ethical Digital. And I'd like to end off, just before we go into questions, with, like all technology, social media is neutral, but it's best put into the work and the service of building a better world. Thank you.
Do we have any questions, or even if anybody wants to share, like, what's been working for your organization for dealing with the bombardment? Go ahead.
I have a question. My company has been really struggling with alt text. Do you have any best practice tips for alt text? I think the main question we're coming up with a lot is, how descriptive do we really be? And then that comes into, are we going to, like, assume people's identities to be descriptive, such as race or gender? Like, if someone uses they, them pronouns, do we have to then put pronouns in every alt text? Like, we're just really struggling with that, and I just wondered if you had any tips or anything.
I love it. That's a really tricky thing, because you're right. Like, and you don't want your alt text to suddenly descriptive.
Yeah, and then it's just so there's so many rabbit holes when we don't get anywhere. Like, well, and then you have a character limit, and then they're like, what about this? And then it's not productive, and we don't have an answer.
Yeah, definitely. So alt text, for those who aren't as familiar with it, is actually just a place that you can describe your images or your social media post or your visuals in some form for people who have visual disabilities. And so in the meantime, oftentimes, if this picture was the thing that would be online, the alt text might say, woman in blue dress standing in front of television with, this phrase, and if you have space. So I've seen it done really well, and I've seen it done badly. But I will say, even for us, we're kind of sometimes, like, it feels a little bit unnatural to be putting it in. So there's some social media platforms that really make this easy, like LinkedIn almost encourages, every time if you've been doing your own posts on LinkedIn, it'll often prompt you to be able to put in alt text. And so my biggest thing, I guess, is just try to stay as neutral as possible, but more maybe lean towards the descriptive side, so it's a bit juicier.
Yeah.
Women in sweet blue dress.
Question?
I'm curious if you have worked with companies who have successfully implemented policy changes related to some of these.
So we haven't worked with the companies themselves, but I've definitely seen some really good examples of people doing this. So again, we implemented the nothing in the evenings after we saw somebody else do it. So that was one of the first things. Some of the other things I've seen, which I thought was really interesting, was the idea of, if you're talking about the company in any form, like, it just gets shared with everybody so that others can retweet it and stuff and create that. So it's sort of, it actually serves the company while also allows people to have that feeling of community. And so it's like, hey, I didn't just put out my post and went to crickets. It's like, no, John came and commented on this, and so did Deborah. So it adds to that community piece around it. So that's another thing I've seen, which is just interesting, simple. I think you can go, every organizational culture and process is going to be different, but I think ultimately it's sort of about thinking about, what do you want that culture to feel like for even your particular group, right? Even if you just have a comms group or an internal group, what are some of the norms that you want to be implementing within that particular piece? And there are, like, if you do a Google search, there's actually quite a few options. Academia's been studying this for a long time. There's been a few groups that have really set up, like, parameters for, like, AI usage and different things like that. And so there are a lot of opportunities and options online too for different processes.
Are there any tools? I know you said you use Slack earlier, but I represent, like, a global organization, mm-hmm. So I struggle with, like, being representative in terms of inclusive, in terms of, like, delivering content and stuff like that. Are there any tools in Slack that you use to, like, communicate with a broad audience like that, or is there a sweet spot time or day instead of global message?
No, not totally. I would say most often, like, there's just really simple free tools like Twiriad, if you want to be like, here's the best time to be tweeting to reach the most people, and it's called Twiriad. Yeah, so you just put in your Twitter handle. I'm not sure, it might not be really work for some of the security levels of the different corporations, but you can just put in your Twitter address, and it'll go through, and it'll actually say, hey, most of your people are on at this time, and it's a good time. So that may be kind of a way to do something like that, is sort of more maybe choosing 4 or 5 times and maybe adds extra work, but maybe sort of different messaging for different time zones, that sort of thing.
I have kind of an observation on the nothing piece, is to be careful about creating overwhelming points. Mm-hmm. So I literally just talked to a UK-based employee, and I'm thinking, oh, that's like scheduling is the best thing since sliced bread.
Right.
And he's like, I come in the first thing in the morning, it's just a huge message. So think about like staggering it, not making it 9 or 8 a.m. their time, but maybe the next shared time that you have, you already got your thought out on that side.
I love that comment. You're absolutely right. I do that to my staff often too, because I'll be like, oh, I'm working all weekend. I don't want them to know. And then Monday they come in. So there is like on Slack, and I'm sure for staff too, that you can actually schedule different times. So it doesn't have to be at 9 a.m. on Monday. It can be like, and then especially for me, like if there's something more important, I'll try to hit it at 9 a.m. But if it's something nice, like later, I usually schedule it for 1. So they get blasted with like 5 messages at 1. But based on what she said yesterday, it's also a signal to them that, you know, that's not as important. I'd like for them to look at it, but it's not as important or pressing.
So we are at time, but before we go, could you put up that QR code one more time in case anybody wants that? And thank you again.
Awesome.